Hello everyone, this is Mike Quimsey, Connecting the Light. Have a double bill this week, the usual Sheldon Neidl message on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation, but also Matthew's message, which I wasn't able to fit in last week, unfortunately. I've had plenty of items of general news. The UFO section, where I'm trying to get round to reading about the healing incidents which were associated with UFOs, and I have a couple of up-to-date items as well. And then finally, if there is time, one or two or more channeled messages of a spiritual nature. So I'll start now with the message through Sheldon Neidl. And it reads, "We come again, dear ones, with more news about what is occurring on your world. At present, the last dark cabal is busy defending its interests around the globe. Our new galactic advisors on these matters first predicted the cabal's use of these most immoral strategies weeks ago. We are telling our Earth allies to proceed according to the agreements reached between us. Until last few foreseen struggles are over, we are to see that the status quo remains in effect. These conditions of relative non-movement are not to last very much longer. During its death throes, the cabal has managed to keep a hold on most large international banking transactions. However, this grip is now loosening at a much more accelerated rate due to the numerous plans that our Earth allies have put in place. These special financial tricks are paying dividends, and we expect that you are very close to receiving the funds so long promised you. In addition, our Earth allies are arranging for the legal removal of the present US regime. The first domino is nearly set to fall. Before this happens, our Earth allies are preparing the legal transitional government that is to restore America. The entire government of America is to be replaced. Understandably, this process at first seemed quite daunting. In short, an entire new government replacing all that has governed America from the American Civil War onward must hit the ground running. All the myriad statutes, types of governments, and modes of election need to be reformed. This involves revoking, literally, thousands of laws and modes of enforcement, reviewing all prior sentencing, and setting in place many former state constitutions, as well as an entire system of workable common law, including suitable constitutional courts. Judges need to be retrained where feasible, and a new means of retraining and retesting all attorneys and potential attorneys instituted. Indeed, no small task. Furthermore, recasting the whole election process is essential. This puts an end to the biased, money-based political system that has dominated America for decades. The wholesale revision of the US political apparatus is to apply to Canada, Europe, and most of the Commonwealth state nations that formerly were part of the British Empire. In short, an enormous change in the world's political systems is to occur. These transformations form a large part of the fiscal and banking changes that are to accompany the formal delivery of the prosperity funds to your world. This is part of an operation that aims to create the type of world corporation that is required to carry out the multiple disclosures needed for you to assume your first task of stewardship. These include solving your global pollution dilemmas, ending world hunger and poverty, and setting up a means to resolve all prevailing, serious political difficulties among the nations of the world. To do this, the present global political environment needs drastic reformation. Everywhere you look on most continents of Mother Earth, there is conflict. Conflict is supported by the highly chaotic political situation you now live in. Reforming this political climate calls for you to adopt a new set of standards to work from. In this new political climate, things that cannot get done before will get done. Our Earth allies have had time to think long and hard about just how to do this legally and properly. Bear in mind that your global society has long been held hostage by a group of cabals whose sole interest was bettering themselves at the expense of Mother Earth and her peoples. These ones felt themselves to be above everything because they were the appointed minions of the planet's overlords, the Anunnaki. Now this has changed. The Anunnaki relinquished their former position of authority over a decade ago. Since then, the world remained in the erstwhile state while a group of very powerful men and women fought to determine what path your world was to take. This conflict is closing in on its own resolution. What our Earth allies are now doing, along with the resources given to them by heaven and by us, ensures their victory. The final of this long struggle comprises a last piece that forces the Dark Cabal to withdraw and surrender. The act of surrender changes everything. The world is at last set free from the tyranny of the past 13 millennia. An aspect of this immense shift is the unveiling of a great deal of long-suppressed technology, which runs the gamut from new sources of power to ways of quickly turning around your pollution crisis. Almost overnight, your world is liberating from the oppression of the petroleum age. Transnational energy conglomerates run your world with the support of a banking system that only encourages their avarice. This global web translated its power into the global political system. And since 9/11, the difficulty springing from this total disregard for Mother Earth and her people have been accelerated. Inevitably, the vast excesses of these energy cartels and their associated petrochemical and energy industries are coming to a head. The time has come for them to pay for their crimes. This movement by our Earth allies for a huge alteration of your planet is in fact divine. If humanity is to survive these times, you need an agency capable of the task. Drastic times require drastic measures, and the events following the delivery of your funds are just the thing your world needs. Further, it is beyond the measure of most minds to know the depth and extent of the changes required. Further, it is generally accepted that the degree of your global problems are largely insuperable. This is why the present series of activities were set in motion by the divine, and why we are taking the time in this message to assure all that the required changes are nearly in place. As you look back on the full run of events that has preceded what is now occurring, you can see how labyrinthine an undertaking it was, and how essential divine inspiration is to both the process and the outcome of this staggering undertaking. The operations currently underway are the start of a complex process that sets stage for our arrival. We understand how difficult it may be for many to fully comprehend the many issues involved, and we know that the events forming part of the fall of the first domino need a lot of detailed explanation. Accordingly, the transitional governments, especially the American one, have set up a schedule of presentations of 3 to 4 hours each, one to be broadcast every evening for a period of 10 days once the initial governmental change has occurred. These messages can bring the American people up to speed on the myriad changes taking place. Similar programs are to be broadcast by the many other new governments resulting from the actions of our Earth allies. These things are to serve as the prelude to a mass first contact. We sense that the moment for this grand event is not that far off. Our part is initially to provide the guidance and wisdom in support of the excellent plans of our Earth allies. Next, we are to act as a divine observer in support of the excellent plans and the purpose, and to ensure that what is promised by our Earth allies is duly manifested. As these things come to fruition, we can, at the divine right moment, introduce ourselves to you. With this done, we can then set about the task of carrying out the last stages of a formal first contact with you. Then for us, the fun and joy truly begin. And the mission of restoring you to full consciousness can start in earnest. You can then complete all this by forming a galactic society with your inner Earth family and forging the beginnings of the new Star Nation. Today we have carried on with the news of what is happening on your world. We ask you to remain patient and to be able to respond to whatever comes next. And the message finally concludes, this is a time in your history when a colossal change of direction for your planet is to take place. There we are. A greatly encouraging message, which obviously makes quite clear that there will be some preliminary announcements prior to the first mass contact. The preparation will be thorough. Now I move on to Matthew's message. I've detailed out some of the questions and answers because I don't feel that they are quite as important to the program, but I have picked out the ones that I feel will be of interest. Matthew has asked about the caving in by Congress, and his reply included the following comments. I remind you that after the election that gave the Democratic Party a slim majority, I cautioned not to expect great changes in policies because, despite appearances, the two-party system is a fallacy. The entire administration, from the President to the junior members of Congress, is one body of elected public servants that for two centuries has been controlled by the dictates of its Illuminati members or have heavily influenced by that elitist group. He went on to add that Democrats are no more strong-willed than Republicans to do the right thing, just as they are no more immune to threats to their family's safety or bribes or pork barrel favors. He went on to say, from now until November 2008, you'll see candidates for election and re-election dropping out along the way as their true colors are disclosed, and others emerging as wise, honest, trustworthy leaders. I'm referring only to the candidacy issue, so please do not take my words as an indication that not until next year's election will you see evidence of the intensifying light that we see so clearly now. He mentions also that, in talking of Bush, that as an Illuminati member himself, Bush willingly complied with the group's dictates, just as he has throughout his tenure in office. But this will profit them naught. All instances of injustice throughout your world, whether legislated or simply imposed upon the Earth and all her forms, cannot last. Their darkness has been consistently exposed and either is transmuted into light that anchors on your planet or enters the universe's natural, neutral energy pool. Matthew was asked a question along these lines, saying that is 2012 the end of the Earth's ascension and completion of all transitional phases into the Golden Age? He gave a short answer, saying that all darkness will have been transmuted and the Earth's individual balance attained. But it is not correct that after the year 2012, everything achieved up to that time will remain unchanged henceforth. Remember, the only constant in the universe is change. Spiritual and intellectual growth and technological progress will continue. You wouldn't want it any other way. Now, I moved on a bit through Matthew's message, and I came to another question, which was asking about those souls who reneged upon joining the light, and it was talking about the effect that resulted in deaths of our troops, as it was referred to, and their families' grief in amendments to their pre-birth agreements. And that was put forward as a question. if the soldiers and their families don't agree to any amendments, does that mean those soldiers won't die? Does that pertain to debilitating injuries too? What will happen to the racist souls in the tiny ore part of Nirvana? And Matthew had answered that by saying that the death has to be put into context of the entire agreement and the experiencing that all participating souls choose. For instance, if the family's agreement included the sudden transition from any cause of a specific child at approximately age 20, it would be within the agreement provisions that if the child was a 19-year-old soldier who was mortally wounded in a war zone. The same is true of the life-altering injuries. If the family agreement including a severe debilitation of the father at about the age 35, that would drastically change the lives of all in the family. Paraplegia resulting from a broken back due to a military helicopter crash would fulfill that provision agreed upon by the 36-year-old husband, his wife, and their three young children. Now, taking into account that millions of deaths and many millions of debilitating injuries can be attributed to events that happened after the Dark Souls refused one of their agreement to join the Light Forces about 6 or 7 years ago, it is safe to say that some of the occupational troops and most of the natives of the affected Mideast countries who died or suffered disabling wounds did amend their contracts. All souls in the family agreement can discuss changing their original choices with lightning speed, and considering the circumstances in these times on Earth that would require this kind of discussion, there is agreement among all the participants. When you consider that agreements are designed to benefit all participants and are based in unconditional love, that the majority of souls came to complete their density karmic lessons, that amended agreements provide credit for incomplete lessons in the case of premature transition, and that divine grace is also bestowed upon those with unchosen debilitating injuries and psychic trauma, and all family and friends who suffer grief, loss, and other hardships. You can see why all affected souls rapidly agree to amend the original provisions. And that is where I shall end my extracts from Matthew's last message. I'm just checking through the final pages. Oh no, there's just one more question asked, quite a short one here, right on the final page, which I almost overlooked. Matthew was asked, can someone place a curse against another that could affect the person and his or her family for years? Interesting question, I thought. Matthew said this is totally within the province of core belief systems. If the person upon whom a curse is placed believes in its effectiveness, that is his or her reality. Thus the curse can affect that person and I lost my place in here, sorry about that. Yes, the effectiveness that is his or her reality, that's a curse, can affect that person and very likely by extension the family circumstances. Sorry about that, I jumped a paragraph down. I suppose I could conclude by just running on to the next question and answer. When someone asked about Adam and Eve not partaking of the knowledge of good or evil, and they were saying, I believe that since everything is of God, the Creator, there can be no evil except in our belief system. And this resulted in judgment, which is a false concept. Matthew's reply was that while there is great truth in that, it becomes distorted by the Adam and Eve story that was devised millennia past as an attempt to understand life itself, in which there are the differences of polarity and duality. Also, semantics and their interpretation come heavily into play here. Good and evil can be descriptive words to distinguish between behavior or happenings, as beneficial or harmful as viewed by the individual who designates them as one or the other. And in this word usage, it can be either a judgment of the person or an opinion. an assessment of the person's conduct. It is this judgment that we have urged you to forego, because you do not know anyone's soul contract, including your own. But that does not mean you must approve of behavior or attitudes or condone situations that cause suffering to others or self. Your expression, take the high road, is applicable to all evaluations of your observations. So there we are. There I shall end with matters. I shall have a quick sip of water because I can feel my throat tickling. Just bear with me. Right. That seems to have cleared it. I now come on to quite a number of general news items here. My first one is one that comes from what is a new website for me called afterdowningstreet.org. And it was an article written by David Swanson. Simply mention something that keeps cropping up, and that is regarding impeachment. And this one refers to Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who has joined Lynn Wolseley, the other co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and Congressmembers Yvette Clarke, Jane Jakowski, William Lacey Clay, Albert Wynne, and Dennis Kucinich, who are co-sponsoring articles of impeachment against Vice President Dick Cheney. Now, if you want to find the details of that, you can go to a site called impeachcheney.org. That's all there is on that one, but this impeachment subject keeps cropping up almost on a weekly basis, and I think we have to be pleased to see that. On the same subject, there was an article that came off the website dnaindia.com, and it came out on Thursday, May the 31st, and it was a daily news and analysis from Washington, and it was saying that former US Vice President Al Gore, a staunch critic of George W. Bush, has said he doesn't agree with calls for impeaching the president due to, as he called it, lack of time and consensus. The article reads that many Democrats feel that Bush should be impeached for allegedly misleading the country deliberately in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. And he quotes, with a year and a half to go in his term and with no consensus in the nation as a whole to support such a proposition, any realistic analysis of that as a policy option would lead to one question, the allocation of time and resources. And this was attributed to Al Gore during an interview with PBS. Pressed on whether he believed that impeachment is a good use of time, Gore replied, I don't think it is. I don't think it would be successful. On being asked whether he threw the towel in too soon in the 2000 presidential elections where he narrowly lost to Bush, Gore said he had taken the fight as far as he could and the only option left was a violent revolution. I took it all the way to a final Supreme Court decision, and in our system, there is no intermediate step between a final Supreme Court decision and violent revolution. So at that point, having taken it as far as one could, then the question becomes, are we going to be a nation of laws and not people? Do I support the rule of law even though I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision? I did disagree with it. And I think that those of us who disagree with it will have the better of the argument in history. But there we are. There's one reason why Al Gore doesn't believe in it. But I don't know. Time. Maybe we've got plenty of time. You might ask, what is the problem? Now, from a website called dailycost.com, and that's K-O-S, dailycost.com. This came out on Friday last. It was talking about a judge who halts a mercenary's Iraq contract. And the question was asked, could a judge force our pullout? We have been told that the mercenaries in Iraq number about equal in size to our own troops. By not letting this contract go forward, will Bush have to get out? It's possible. And it reads that a federal judge yesterday, which would have been May the 31st, ordered the military to temporarily refrain from awarding the largest security contract in Iraq. The order followed an unusual series of events set off when a U.S. Army veteran filed a protest against the government practice of hiring what he called mercenaries, according to sources familiar with the matter. He said, this article only mentions 20,000 mercenaries, but I believe that we know that the number is much higher. That quarter now in Iraq, a British firm, are now already out of the running on this one because the GA, there's a letter missing there, it hasn't come out very well on this print, dropped them from the running. So here we are. A bit of news there. I hope there's a follow-up on to see if indeed it does have any effect. There's an article written by Greg Pallas from the website bradblog.com, and this came out a couple of weeks ago, actually, on Thursday, 24th of May, and it was referring to what were known as the missing rogue emails revealing the KGB scheme to steal 2008. I guess it means the election. I'm not sure. It sort of finishes in midair there. Anyway, it refers to using the phrase, this moniker revealed something hotter, much hotter, than a stained blue dress. In an opening testimony yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee, Monica Goodling, the blonde underling to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and Department of Justice liaison to the White House, dropped the big one, and the committee members didn't even know it. Goodling testified that Gonzalez Chief of Staff Carl Sanson perjured himself, lying to the committee in earlier testimony. The lie, Sanson denied Monica had told him about Tim Griffin's involvement in caging voters in 2004. The perplexed committee members had no clue and asked no substantive questions about it thereafter. Carl Rove is still smiling. If the members had gotten a clue and asked the right questions, they would have found the keys to the kingdom they thought they were looking for. They dangled right in front of their perplexed faces. The keys, the missing emails, and missing link that could send Griffin and his boss Rowe to the slammer for a long, long time. But what's caging and why is it such a dreadful secret that lawyer Sanson put his license to practice and his freedom on the line to cover Tim Griffin's involvement in it? Because it's a felony, and a big one. Now, the report reads, our BBC team broke the story at the top of the nightly news everywhere on the planet, except the USA. Only because America's news network simply refused to cover this evidence of the electoral coup d'etat that chose our president in 2004. And the article goes on to explain what caging is, which you might as well say is fiddling. It does mention in its concluding part that there's no pride in this report, that the BBC broke the story at the top of the nightly news everywhere on the planet, and it repeats that that was because the America's news networks refused to cover the evidence. So there we are. If you want to find more, you can go to the website, which is bradblog.com. He's a good writer. I remember reading articles from him before. The sad news that's come up in the last week is that Cindy Sheehan, the lady from Dublin in Ireland, said that she's leaving the Democratic Party. And I'll read the first three paragraphs of her article. And she said, Dear Democratic Congress, my name is Cindy Sheehan and my son Casey Sheehan was killed on April 4, 2004 in Baghdad. He was killed when the Republicans still were in control of Congress. Naively, I set off on a tireless campaign calling on Congress to rescind George's authority to wage his war of terror while asking him for what noble cause did Casey and thousands of others have to die. Now with the Democrats in control of Congress, I have lost my optimist naivety and have become cynically pessimistic as I see you all caving into Mr. 28%. There is absolutely no sane or defenceful reason for you to hand Bloody George King more money to condemn more of our brave, tired and banished soldiers and the people of Iraq to more death and carnage. You think giving him more money is politically expedient, but it is a moral abomination, and every second the occupation of Iraq endures, you will have more blood on your hands. Miss Pelosi, Speaker of the House, said after George signed the new weak as a newborn baby funding authorization bill, quote, now I think the president's policy will begin to unravel, unquote. And Cindy Shedd says, begin to unravel, how many more of our children have to be killed and how much more of Iraq will have to be demolished before you all think enough unraveling or unraveling has occurred? How many more crimes will Bush and company be allowed to commit while their poll members are crumbling before you, all gain the political courage to hold them accountable? If Iraq hasn't unraveled, in Ms. Pelosi's mind, what will it take? With almost 700,000 Iraqis dead and 4 million refugees, which, she added, the US refuses to admit. How could it get worse? Well, it is getting worse, and it can get much worse, thanks to your complicity. That's all I wanted to read. It's sad to see Cindy moving off the scene, because I think she had a lot of good effect and opened a lot of people's eyes to what was taking place. So, we'll leave it like that. Cindy Sheehan, incidentally, was founder and president of the Gold Star Families for Peace, and presumably she still is. And she was also the founder and director of the Camp Casey Peace Institute. So she's not an idle lady by any means, and hopefully that part of her activities will carry on. Now, the Nigerians are filing a case against Pfizer. This came off a new Yahoo.com site, so I can't credit it to the actual source. This happens sometimes with emails. We can't always seem to find out where they originated from. But I imagine this was a press report. It's from Kano in Nigeria, and I'll read parts of it for you so that we can understand what it is the Nigerians are, what they have against Pfizer. It says, the authorities in northern Nigeria have filed a $2 billion civil case and were preparing criminal charges against the US drug company Pfizer, accusing it of conducting a drug experiment that led to the deaths and disabilities in a group of children more than a decade ago. And that was according to the court papers. New York-based Pfizer, the world's largest drug maker, has denied any wrongdoing. And a federal court in Manhattan dismissed a 2001 lawsuit by disabled Nigerians who allegedly took part in the study, but the case is now under appeal. A statement that week, that was the end of May, Pfizer said allegations in the Nigeria case were simply untrue. They weren't valid when they were first raised years ago, and they're not valid today. It also said Pfizer's study was conducted in a responsible and ethical way, consistent with the company's abiding commitment to patient safety. In the civil suit, authorities in Nigeria's Kano state allege Pfizer illegally conducted the drug experiment on 200 children during a meningitis epidemic in the state's main city called Kano in 1996, resulting in deaths, brain damage, paralysis and slurred speech in many of the children. Apparently, Pfizer treated 100 meningitis-infected children with an experimental antibiotic Trovan, and another 100 children who were control patients in the study received an approved antibiotic cetriaxone, but the dose was lower than recommended, the family's lawyers alleged. And up to 11 children in the study died, while others suffered physical disabilities and brain damage, but Pfizer always insisted its records show none of the deaths was linked or to the drugs or substandard treatment. But there we are, so that will go on. I'm sorry, I have to be suspicious about what the drug companies have said, even based on the little bit of evidence that's probably evident from the case, which is going through the court. And at least it would appear they have something to answer for. Now, well, a website called PressEC.com, that's PRESSEC, and it's warning that US debt could trigger a dollar collapse. This is as per the UN, and I read a little bit of it. This was submitted by Desha Kriya on Thursday, the 31st of May. That went global in the Americas and the United States. And it said, the United States dollar is facing imminent collapse in the face of an unsustainable debt. And that's what the United Nations warned on that day. They said the debt, which had now deepened to well over $3 trillion, might turn out to be unsustainable in the rest of 2007 or next, putting further downward pressure on the United States dollar. Rob Voss, the director of the Development Policy and Analysis Division of the Department of Economic and Social Affairs, told correspondents at a headquarters press conference. He pointed out that since its peak in 2002, the dollar had depreciated vis-à-vis the major currencies by some 35% and by 25% against a broader range of other currencies. Voss made these comments at the launch of the 2007 World Economic Situation and Prospects Report mid-year update. With the increased debt, the risk of a sharp depreciation of the dollar continued, he warned. If countries willing to invest in United States dollar assets expected further depreciation, they might be less willing to hold dollar assets, triggering a much sharper fall in the United States dollar. The risk of disorderly adjustment and the steep fall of the dollar existed. The policy challenge was how to prevent the hard landing of the United States dollar and forge a benign adjustment of the global imbalance. Of course, the whole article was somewhat longer than that, and you can get the gist of the problem from those comments. And it has been speculated that the dollar is likely to fall for quite some long time now. On the going back to the 1st of the May, just talking on what happens here in the UK, MPs were warned that hidden mini cameras and microphones that can eavesdrop on conversation in the street are the next step in the march towards a Big Brother society. And that a debate had begun about whether listening devices should be set up alongside Britain's 4.5 million CCTV cameras. And a lot of these are hidden in lampposts. And they are also talking about talking CCTV, which is to be trialled in 20 areas across the country. And they are reported on that matter. This came up in the Daily Telegraph on the 2nd of May. Yes, I don't know about eavesdropping on conversations. They say that if you're not a criminal, you shouldn't have anything to worry about being CCTV all the time. But I don't know. I think it can go over the top. I have an article here from a website called FT.com. It's a short one here, but it's saying, and this was penned by Fiona Harvey in London and Hugh Williamson in Berlin and George Parker in Brussels, 1st of June. And they were saying that Europe was furious at the US climate call and that Germany and the European Commission reacted angrily to President George W. Bush's apparent change of heart on climate change on Friday, setting the stage for a stormy G8 summit of rich industrialised countries. And, of course, that took place this week. A spokesman for Angela Merkel, Germany's Chancellor and current G8 President, said Germany's stance that climate talks should take place in the United Nations was non-negotiable. Stavros Dimas, the EU Environment Commissioner, dismissed the proposals for climate talks as vague and the classic US line. George Bush on Thursday appeared to suggest the parallel process to the UN, by which the world's 15 biggest emitters of greenhouse gases would within 18 months establish a new framework on greenhouse gases when the Kyoto Protocol expires in 2012 and set a long-term global goal on reducing emissions. His proposal marked the reversal of the US policy of refusing to discuss emission cuts and rejecting a global framework such as Kyoto. What it doesn't, of course, mention is that the US did in fact agree to certain levels of reduction in greenhouse gases under the Kyoto Agreement, and then with the coming of George Bush, they actually pulled out and said they wouldn't do it. So if you read between the lines, I think that is just something to try and stall the whole process. Right, getting near the end of the general news, which is fine because it gives me time to run through the UFO and ET items. There's a comment about the GOP debate on Tuesday. I don't know where this came from, actually. It's only a short extract. But he was commenting that the GOP results were overwhelmingly in favour of Ron Paul. And he said it thus comes as no surprise that CNN has removed the comments about him and redirected the link to comments about Monday night's debate. And he says, shame on CNN for trying yet again to pre-screen the candidates before the elections. A copy of the comments about Ron Paul presented in its entirety, as they were before CNN pulled out, can be found here. And it reads, it is time for the American voters to send a clear message that the mainstream media will not choose the President of the United States. That choice belongs to we, the people. Shame on the CNN for such underhanded chicanery. Tuesday, 5th of June, there was an interview with Amy Goodman, with John Perkins, and this came from that very good website, truthout.org. And it was with John Perkins, who has written a book called The Secrecy of the American Empire, Economic Hitman, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. And she spent an hour with him. And John Perkins is one who plays with work deep inside the forces driving corporate globalization. And in his book, he told the story of his work as a highly paid consultant hired to strong-arm leaders into creating policy favourable to the US government and corporations, what he calls corporatocracy. John Perkins has just come out with a new book, the title of which I've given you, and he says that hundreds of thousands of protesters are gathering in Germany ahead of tomorrow's G8 meeting of the world's richest nations, and the three-day summit is being held in the coastal resort of Heiligendamm. German police have spent $18 million to erect an 8-mile-long, 2-metre-high fence around the meeting site. Global warming will be high on the agenda, and going into the meeting, President Bush has proposed to sideline the UN-backed Kyoto Accords and set voluntary targets on reducing emissions of greenhouse gas. So there we see he wants to make it all voluntary, which isn't very clever. The interview, which, as I've said, spent an hour with this man, and he told the story of his work as a highly paid consultant. And he said he helped the US cheat poor countries around the globe out of trillions of dollars by lending them more money than they could possibly repay and then taking over their economies. This is John Perkins, in 1971-81, worked for the international consulting firm of Chastity Main, where he was a self-described economic hitman. So if you want that title again, and you go onto the web, no doubt you can find a few extracts from the book. John Perkins called The Secrecy of the American Empire, Economic Hitman, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. I've nearly finished. Yeah, dear me. I always seem to have so many general news items here. Let's have a look. Had a good article about green tea, about how wonderful it is for you. It's something positive for a change. And that it fights Alzheimer's disease, the flu, plaque, which you get on your teeth, and it also helps you lose weight, lowers cholesterol, and it balances glucose levels for diabetics. And apparently some of the benefits of it are now available in pills, so there we are. Well, I'm moving on quickly now to my UFO section. But not very often I get some updated information. There's a very interesting one here, which seems to have come via Richard Boylan. That's how it reads to me anyway. And it came out on June 5th, and it reads, Vatican official declares extraterrestrial contact is real. There's something. And it refers to Monsignor Padre Corrado Balducci. And it reads that more than 20 military, government and corporate witnesses spoke under oath about the vast cover-up of an unambiguous UFO and extraterrestrial events for over the past 50 years. How can we be so naive as to think that our one tiny Earth planet might be the only place in the universe to contain living, evolving beings? On May the 9th, 2001, one of the largest and most successful press conferences known as the Disclosure Project was completed under the direction of Dr. Stephen Greer and held at Washington, D.C.'s National Press Conference, where more than 20 military, government and corporate witnesses gave testimony before millions of people and the international media. Now, witnesses spoke under oath, and they spoke about UFO and extraterrestrial events that have happened over the past 50 years. Now, it says that in addition, these covert governmental groups are withholding valuable technologies gained by the reverse engineering of UFO craft. And they're referring, of course, to the major world governments who have initiated a total cover-up of their many interactions with the extraterrestrial races. They say that their presently hidden knowledge of zero-point anti-gravity cold fusion energy power would enable us to immediately remove our dependence on fossil fuels, thus halting the threat of global warming. Reed goes on to say that of most urgent need, however, is a requirement confirmed in legislation binding world governments to ban all weapons from space and to cease targeting peaceful extraterrestrial vehicles. We all share of multi-dimensional space with many other galactic civilizations far in advance of ourselves, both spiritually and technologically. It is their desire to welcome planet Earth and her inhabitants into the interplanetary community. This will be only attained when humanity is able to achieve peaceful negotiations and resolution of its conflicts, both globally and in space. Not very much about the actual report from the Vatican official that I refer to. I would like to have seen that. Perhaps that may crop up and I can include it another time. What I do have, however, is a report that only came to me this day. The source is the website expolitics.org of Michael E. Salla, S-A-L-L-A. And it reads that the final presenter on the first day of the conference, Transforming the Earth Through Inspiration and Vision, was conference co-organizer Angelica Whitecliffe, who gave an uplifting account of humanity's hidden history and telepathic future. She mentioned astonishing evidence from Michael Kremos within archaeology, and she used it to help her belief that there are common misconceptions of humanity as a relatively new creation arising some 300,000 years ago, either from Darwinian natural selection or from extraterrestrial intervention, as claimed by Sachurai Sitchin. And she used some evidence to show that it went back even further. I then had a speaker, Dr. Frank Stranges, who discussed evidence concerning the suppression of the Dead Sea Coals. He reminded the audience that ever since their discovery in 1947, The contents of the Dead Sea Scrolls have been very controversial and only released in a very selective and incomplete manner. Important parts of the Dead Sea Scrolls remain hidden to this day and suggest that their contents greatly disturb established religions' traditions. He claims that the hidden contents refer to extraterrestrial visitors that were known in antiquity and who played a powerful role in the development of modern religions. He also described his own meetings and conversations with extraterrestrial visitors that continue to this day. There's another presentation featuring evidence of extraterrestrials living among us due to their close physical resemblance and ability to blend in without being noticed. Yes, there was actually an ET who was supposed to have appeared and given an address at the United Nations many, many years ago. And if the photograph was genuine, he certainly looked absolutely human. The next presenter was Ralph Wynne, who in only his second public appearance described in great detail the events leading up to his work with Otis Carr on the development of a civilian spacecraft. Ralph described how his own efforts to develop natural solutions to problems concerning electromagnetic energy were frustrated in the corporate sector. He then teamed up with Otis Carr, who built an operational 45-foot saucer-shaped spacecraft, the OTCX-1, that was successfully tested with Ralph as one of the three pilots. After his project was closed down by the federal government agencies, Ralph continued to research and develop ways to levitate vehicles and buildings, which he convinced is feasible if authorities permitted such technology to enter into the public sector. There are one or two items there to give some thought to. Now, at last, although I've only got about 5 minutes left, I can get on to Bee's report. It appeared in an old copy of the Flying Saucer Review going back to September-October 1969. And what they did was collected a few articles that refer to experiences of hearing from UFOs. So I'll read the first one. This happened in 1948 in Germany and is related to a young German named Hans Klotzbach. He was aboard a coal train headed towards Luxembourg and was hoping to enter that country illegally. He hadn't got a passport. And during the night, just before the train was scheduled to reach the frontier control station at Wasserbillig, Klotzbach leapt from his coal wagon onto the embankment beside the track and sustained terrible injuries to both legs. Quite unable to walk and losing much blood, he fainted. He alleges that when he recovered consciousness, he found himself inside a flying saucer, in a cabin bathed in an indescribable sort of opal bluish light. The voice addressed him in German and gave a great deal of information about some of the more cataclysmic events that impend for this planet in the near future. This voice said that they had chanced upon his body as he lay dying beside the railway line and had felt compassion for him. He listened to the voice and then goes off again. 4 days later, Hans Klotzbach came to and found himself lying on mossy bank in a small wood just 6 kilometres inside Luxembourg and about 10 kilometres from where he had made his jump. His trousers were thickly encrusted with dried blood and his shoes were full of dried blood, but his injured legs had been totally healed. That was quite something, wasn't it? I never remember reading about that around the time that event occurred, so I guess we're very lucky to hear about that. Now, I've got a couple of minutes left here, so I'm afraid that's the only UFO report I can read out, because it will take a little longer to read the remaining ones. But I will conclude by an extract from a spiritual message that was channeled, at least I believe it was channeled, no, maybe not. It's the Daily Quado portion from October 20th, 2005, and it reads, "Today would be a wonderful day to forgive. Today would be a perfect day to give yourself this gift, for forgiveness is not a gift you give to the person you are forgiving. It is a gift you give to yourself. When you harbour resentment, hurt, anger and bitterness within you. They release corrosive emotions, eat away at your peace and eventually your health. They are destructive to you, and so by not forgiving, you have done yourself double harm. You have suffered from whatever it was that first caused you pain, and then you have suffered for long after from emotions of your own making. Just your own making, for it is entirely within your power to release all of this. So take the stone of unforgiveness from your heart and allow your heart to again become pliable and trusting and able to love again. And so today, actively and consciously begin this process of releasing. Your goal is very simple, to clear yourself of the corrosive emotions which are eating away at your happiness, your peace, your center. And of course, the object of your forgiveness may be yourself as well as someone else. And finally, lead the way, focus on yourself and the clearing, the release of the emotions. You do not even need to focus on the object of your forgiveness. Just release the old feelings and create a space for the great unending love, the universe to flow in. And now, my friends, I have to leave you. My time is up. I hope you enjoyed what I selected, and I also hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.